Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Fantastic Friday to you. So good to have you with me. It's Friday the 13th. Don't worry. Hopefully this won't be a horror show, but it'll be hopefully very peaceful and fun. But we're going to kick off the weekend the right way. We're going to get you set up for Super Wild Card Weekend. Yep, we'll have our staff picks so you can go to Vegas with confidence. But we're also going to talk about some church stuff as well. A bishop speaks out, and man, you're going to want to hear what he has to say. Tesla makes an incredible price drop. Man, this is tempting. If you're in the market for an EV, you're going to want to hear about this. Lots of stuff coming up and your questions and comments as well. So once again, you can call in, as always, to the show. Don't forget, by the way, you can email us. Before I get the phone number, you can email us, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark. Once again, that phone number to call, 1-888-914-9149, 914-9149. That's the toll-free studio line for the Cale Clark Show. And as I mentioned just a second ago, we are obviously in union with the bishops here at Relevant Radio. And a very prominent American bishop, I gave an interview to The Pillar. The Pillar is, they do a really good job. They're a Catholic journalism outfit. They've got a website, pillarcatholic.com. J.D. Flynn, canon lawyer, Ed Condon, also canon lawyer. They're Catholic journalists as well. And they've been on Relevant Radio many times over the years. In The Pillar, now, I'm not sure, I think it was Pillar staffers who did this interview. I'm not sure exactly, the person is not named. It just, the interview is by The Pillar. It was just published this morning with the Emeritus Archbishop. Now, of course, we had Pope Emeritus Benedict, and there's the Emeritus Archbishop of Philadelphia, Archbishop Charles Chaput. Not Chaput, as some people mispronounced his name. No, no, no. It's pronounced Chaput. He's one of the leading churchmen in the United States. Like, pew, pew, pew. That's how you pronounce it. Just like the Star Wars. I don't know what they're called. They're not called phasers like in Star Trek. I know that. But there's got to be a name for it. I'm not a Star Wars guy, really. So, but anyways, Archbishop Charles Chaput, pew, 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 was firing, certainly on all cylinders. He was speaking out. He was speaking his mind. It was a bracing conversation. It was an honest conversation. It was, I tell you, he laid it out there. And he's 78 years old now. And I just love his honesty and candor here. Now, just to give you some background on him, in case you're not aware of what his track record is, he served for 9 years as the Bishop of Rapid City, South Dakota. And in 1997, he became the Archbishop of Denver, and in July of 2011, he was appointed to lead the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. He's written 4 books, and The Pillar talked to him about the death of Pope Benedict XVI, the death of Cardinal George Pell, which happened just a couple of days ago, all kinds of issues surrounding the church, what's going on in Rome, Vatican II, how do we understand that, the Synod on Synodality. Don't get me started on that, but we'll talk about that too. I want to share with you some of the things that Archbishop Chaput said to The Pillar, because it really gives us a lot of food for thought. And again, I was just so impressed with how direct he was. And he was asked about the deaths of Pope Benedict and Cardinal Pell, and he was asked about the impact of their lives. And here's what he said. He said, quote, this is Archbishop Chaput, "The church will continue her work and her witness because she depends on no individual except Jesus Christ." And no doubt, Cardinal Pell, Pope Benedict would have hardly agreed with that sentiment. But he did go on to say this. Archbishop Chaput said, quote, "But their absence is a very heavy loss because both men embodied articulate, faithful, Christian intelligence in a remarkable way." And he said this is quite a statement. He said, "No one in current church leadership has the capacity to replace them." Well, let me say that again. He said, "No one in current church leadership has the capacity to replace them. That will happen in time, but the talent bench at the moment seems pretty thin, end of quote. That is quite a statement. He doesn't think there's anybody out there on the horizon that can take their place. Now, I can think of a couple people that I have a high degree of respect for that might be able to pull it off, but that just shows you the kind of regard that he had for Cardinal Pell, and of course, as we all do, for Pope Benedict. And then he was sort of asked about, by the pillar, about the sort of camps, quote-unquote, that are developing in the church that seem to have developed within recent years. And here's what he said. Archbishop Chaput said, quote, "Speaking the truth is polarizing. It got Jesus killed. Bad people with bad ideas dislike good people trying to do good things. And that accounts for the contempt, resentment, and outright lying directed at both men." He's talking about Pope Benedict XVI and Cardinal Pell. "The outright lying directed at both men over the years, including from people who describe themselves as Christians, people within the church herself," end of quote. And so he's right about that. There's no question. It is dangerous to speak the truth. And he rightly calls out people who have slandered Pope Benedict and Cardinal Pell as well. And then the question, he was asked a question about Vatican II, about how a lot of the nature of the disagreements that are happening in the church these days stem from a particular interpretation of Vatican II. And what does he think about that? Do we understand Vatican II rightly? You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. That's the number to call toll free. If you have a take on this, 888-914-9149. So Archbishop Chaput said this, quote, "Was Vatican II an organic development and reform of church life, or a break with the past and a new beginning? That's the central question. And the answers to it lead down very different paths. Breaking with the past seems to disregard any notion of a genuine development of doctrine. Both Ratzinger and Pell saw the council as an experience of continuity and reform. They were right. They were right. But division and conflict have been common in the aftermath of many councils. They just have to be endured and worked through," end of quote. So he says that Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI, had the right view of the council, and so did Cardinal Pell. And he was also asked about whether or not Vatican II was a good thing. There's a lot of discussion in the church about that, whether it was a mistake, whether Vatican II is an illegitimate council, all that sort of thing. And Archbishop Chaput would have none of that. He does think that it's was a good thing that this council was called in order to have a different approach to the modern world. But he did say this. He did say, quote, "The value of every council has limits imposed by its times and the issues it faces. That's why there's more than one of them. Vatican II doesn't repudiate the Council of Trent. It doesn't repudiate the First Vatican Council, for example. But the church did need to adjust her approach to the world and speak to the new conditions framing her mission. That was the intent of John the 23rd in convening it, of Paul the 6th in concluding it, and of John Paul II and Benedict XVI in applying its teachings," end of quote. And I do think that's the right way, in many ways, to look at the pontificate of John Paul II. And of course, Pope Benedict was his close collaborator, so close, and they were definitely of the same mind in terms of how to interpret the council. I think that in light of all the confusion after Vatican II, and as Archbishop Chaput says, there's confusion after every council. There always is, there always has been, there always will be. I think in the case of Vatican II, it was exacerbated by the fact that it was a modern council. Now, can you imagine if it had taken place in the age of social media? Man, all the different takes that would have been out there, the hot takes on the council. But even as it was the television age, of course, and there were so many misinterpretations of the council from the very beginning that got out there. The quote-unquote spirit of Vatican II that is definitely at odds with the council documents. I remember when Pope Benedict was elected, and I was so excited about it because he was one of my favorites, of course. And was Cardinal Ratzinger. I was so overjoyed when he was elected, and I was so excited, and I was telling somebody about this at my local parish, and this guy overheard me, and he said, "I think this is the worst thing that's happened to the church in the last 50 years. I said, "What?" And he said, "All this guy is going to do," meaning Pope Benedict, "is tear down everything that Vatican II stood for." And I'm thinking, like, have you read the documents of Vatican II? Like, what are you talking about? This is sort of the zeitgeist that was in the air of a spirit that was maybe a malevolent spirit, you know, not the spirit of God, that is in total conflict with the actual teachings of Vatican II. But I do think that the pontificate of John Paul II, I think obviously Archbishop Chaput is right about that. I think that in his encyclicals, in his teachings, in his ministry, Pope John Paul II, he really wanted to give the world what he thought was the right interpretation of Vatican II. I think that was the underlying framework of his entire papacy, and obviously Pope Benedict was in continuity with that. But there's been some issues, and I think I don't want to get too deep into the politics of the church and what's going on in Rome, but there have been alarm bells going off, and Archbishop Chaput was asked about some recent developments that are going on in Rome, speaking of something that was founded by St. John Paul II, the Pontifical Academy for Life. He was asked about how the new leader of that Pontifical Academy, Archbishop Vincenzo Paglia, he seems to be, according to in the words of the Pillar, challenging moral principles articulated in Humanae Vitae, Veritatis Splendor. Obviously, Veritatis Splendor, the splendor of truth, one of the encyclicals of JP2, undermining principles perhaps that are laid out in the Catechism. And so he was asked, what about this? What do you think about this? And Archbishop Chaput said, quote, "I suppose it depends on how you define that word faithful." When he was asked, what are the faithful supposed to make of this? How do you define the word faithful? He said, quote, "I think some of the changes over the past few years at the Pontifical Academy for Life and the John Paul II Institute have been imprudent and destructive. In fact, the whole purpose of the Institute that John Paul established has been turned upside down, a clear insult to his magisterium and legacy. There's no fidelity in watering down or breaking with the substance of the documents that you mention," end of quote. So this is pretty, wow, you don't hear bishops talk like this too much in public, but he really lays it out there. He says it's an insult to the magisterium of John Paul II. And then he was asked a series of questions, Archbishop Chaput, in this interview that just came out on the Pillar, pillarcatholic.com. You can check it out. We'll put a link in the show notes. He was asked about the ministry, the teaching of Pope Francis. And so, yeah, what he said and what he didn't say, I think were intriguing, to say the least. So the Pillar asked him about this, saying, and here's the question that was posed to him: "For some Catholics, this relitigation of Catholic moral teachings has come to be seen as a defining aspect of the Francis pontificate. Do you think this is what the cardinal electors of Pope Francis expected when they elected him?" And here's how he just had a one-sentence answer to this question. Archbishop Chaput said, "This pontificate has been a surprise to a lot of people," end of quote. So he seems to be of the mind that this is not necessarily what people were expecting. And so he was asked, well, what do you think the cardinals were expecting when they elected him? And he didn't really answer this in so many words. He said, they're going to have to speak for themselves. But he did talk about Cardinal Francis George, who, of course, was the Archbishop of Chicago, a friend of Archbishop Chaput. And Chaput said that just before he died, Cardinal George told him that the cardinals at the conclave were calling for the Pope to reform the Curia, the Roman Curia. Now, the Curia is sort of the bureaucratic apparatus of the Vatican. You know, all the people that work there, bishops, cardinals, and kind of reminds me of the old joke by Pope John the 23rd. He was once asked, you know, he was taking someone on a tour around the Vatican, and I don't know whether it was a journalist, I can't remember, asked him, "How many people work here?" And the Pope said, "Oh, about half." So anyways, all kidding aside, that's the Roman Curia, and they do work hard, of course. But what's going on with the bureaucracy of the Curia? Does this need to be reformed? That was a big question that was going on. And so Cardinal George apparently told, before he passed away, he told Archbishop Chaput that the cardinals were asking for the Pope to reform the Curia, not reform the Church. And Chaput said that Catholics do, and they should, respect the Pope, support the Pope, but they do expect a continuity in leadership, and they're confused when there's ambiguity at the top, end of quote. And when my priest friends, friends of mine who are priests, they tell me that that's the number one thing that they wish they could see from Rome is clarity on some of these teachings. And so again, Archbishop Chaput, very unvarnished here in his comments, he was asked about whether or not there was support for the reforms of Pope Francis in Rome. And he said, I don't know. He basically says, I'm not in a position to know, but he says, quote, I think the Holy Father's annual addresses to the Curia, which are a matter of public record. And he's right about that. You can look up these speeches that he makes every year. He gives a speech to them. He says these addresses he's made to the Curia have been excessively dark. I'm not sure they inspire or motivate anybody, end of quote. Whew, that, again, this is straight fire here. This is straight talk from Chaput. And he said, you know, let me just skip ahead to this. He was asked what he thought the legacy of Pope Francis is going to be. And he said, quote, legacies are only clear in retrospect. I think he'll be remembered, at least in part, for his concern for immigrants and the poor, his emphasis on simplicity, listening and accompaniment, and reaching out to the margins of the Church and the world. These are all good things, properly understood, but other memories may be more problematic. And then he starts talking about the synod on synodality. And that, to me, has always been, I just think that's, could you not have come up with a better name for this? I don't know who the marketing people are in the Curia. Maybe they need to be looked at here in terms of reform, but I don't know if you've seen the promotional materials for the Synod on Synodality. I mean, they're using Comic Sans MS as the font on the posters. It just very bizarre. And just the whole name, it seems overly meta, a Synod on Synodality. It's like a meeting about meetings. And I don't know, this is just a strange concept to me. But who am I? I'm certainly not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And Archbishop Chaput is much more in tune with this than I am. And he did say this about this process of synodality, and this is an intriguing comment. He said, quote, it's imprudent and prone to manipulation, and manipulation always involves dishonesty. He went on to say, quote, the claim that Vatican II somehow implied the need for synodality as a permanent feature of church life is simply false. The council never came close to suggesting that. Moreover, I was a delegate to the 2018 Synod, and the way synodality was smuggled onto the agenda was manipulative and offensive. It had nothing at all to do with the Synod's theme of young people and the faith. Synodality risks becoming a kind of Vatican III light, a rolling council on a much more controllable, malleable scale that wouldn't serve the needs of the church or her people. End of quote. Wow. So that's an intriguing image, this idea that these synods that keep happening, or the synod on synodality, or just even synodality in general, could become a kind of Vatican III light. It's sort of a council without actually being a council that just kind of keeps on going. And is this a good thing? Is this a good idea? So again, this is a really powerful, I thought, interview that came out this morning with Archbishop Chaput, the Archbishop Emeritus of Philadelphia. We'll have more on this after the break. If you want to call in, if you have a take on this, 888-914-9149. It's the Cale Clark Show, only on Relevant Radio. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to the program on this Friday, kicking off a super wild card weekend for you. We'll have our picks later in the show. The staff are going to put it on the line. No money being exchanged. There's no just pride here, folks. 888-914-9149 is the number to call for the Cale Clark Show. Now, just before the break, we were talking about really kind of an explosive interview, that explosive in its honesty and just, wow, it really takes you back. The Straight Talk from Archbishop Charles Chaput, the Archbishop Emeritus of Philadelphia. And he was actually asked by the Pillar Catholic had an interview with him this week, which was released this morning. You can find it on their website. They asked him point blank whether he was disappointed that he was not made a cardinal. Now, traditionally in the church, archbishops of major metropolitan sees, you know, big cities, like, for example, New York City, have been made cardinals by the Pope. And he was not. As Archbishop of Philadelphia, traditionally the Archbishop of Philadelphia would be a cardinal. He was not made a cardinal. And that's been true of some other prelates as well, such as another friend of the program, Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleone of San Francisco. He has not been given the red hat. Archbishop Gomez in Los Angeles, the second biggest city in the United States, has not been given the red hat. Others have been. And he was asked about that. Cardinal, or not, he should be cardinal. No, that's not for me to judge. No, I'm kidding. I'm not the Pope. Nor do I want to be. Archbishop Chaput was asked, are you disappointed that you're not a cardinal? And his answer was very short, very sweet, very straightforward. He said, no, and I sleep a lot better for it. And that's I'm sure that's 100% sincere too. He's like, no, I mean, it's a little bit like the guy who wants to be Pope, that's the guy you don't want to be Pope. It's an incredible responsibility. The priest who wants to be a bishop, whose goal is to become a bishop, that's maybe the guy you don't want to be a bishop. Anyways, he says, no, I don't want to be a cardinal. I'm not disappointed that I'm not a cardinal. And I sleep a lot better for it because they have a huge responsibility. Obviously, their biggest responsibility is to elect the next pope if they're of voting age. And on a recent episode of The Faith Explained, you can check the archives. I'm not sure which day that was, Producer Jim, but we did talk about in our Q&A session about Catholic cardinals. It was around the death of Cardinal Pell, and there was a question about where do cardinals come from? What's the story with them? Explain this to me. So I tried as best I could to do that. We always have a Q&A segment of in our Faith Explained program, which airs at 12:30 Central, or you can catch it on the Relevant Radio app anytime or in podcast form, wherever you get your pods. That's true of all of our programs, even this one. We count on you guys to spread the word and share them with your friends through social media. We really appreciate that as we seek to bring Christ to the world through the media. And he was also asked, back to this interview with The Pillar, Archbishop Chaput was asked about, there seems to be a bit of a trend that, I'm not too up on this, but The Pillar asked him about this idea that this narrative that's kind of in the ether about the U.S. Bishops' Conference, the USCCB, and this thought that, or this feeling that some of them are anti-Francis or opposed to the leadership of the Pope. And the interviewer from The Pillar, and again, I'm not sure who this was, asked Archbishop Chaput, quote, it strikes me that this carries a danger of turning the personality of the Holy Father into a kind of Catholic litmus test, rather than focusing on continuity and fidelity to Catholic doctrine. Why does this narrative persist? So that was the question. And here's how Archbishop Chaput answered it. He said, quote, respect for the Holy Father is a demand both of Christian charity and filial loyalty. So we do have to, as Catholics, we do have to respect the Holy Father, whoever he may be. We have to pray for him. We have to make spiritual sacrifices for him and ask God to guide him. But he also says this, Archbishop Chaput says, quote, but it never requires servility or adulation. And I can't imagine the Holy Father as an experienced pastor would want that either. The American bishops have always been loyal and candidly very generous to Rome, and that remains the case. Turning serious doctrinal concerns into a personality debate is just a convenient way of evading the substantive issues that need to be addressed. It also shows a complete ignorance of church history. Popes come and go, even the great ones, just like bishops and everyday Christians. What matters, whatever the cost, is fidelity to Catholic teaching, and no excuses need to be offered in pursuing that, end of quote. And I think he's right about that, and I think some of the recent controversies that have been going on have caused us to, and I think it's a healthy thing for the church to step back and say, what is the role of the Pope? What are Catholics obligated to believe or not believe about the role of the papacy? And do we have to agree with every single thing that the Pope says? Or are there limits? And can you respectfully disagree on certain things that are not matters of established doctrine? There are not matters of dogma. Anyway, so just to finish off this, one last question for Archbishop Chaput. He was asked if he would be seen to be critical of Pope Francis in these comments. And he was asked point blank, do you think you're being disloyal to him by airing these comments publicly? And he basically said, not at all. He said, quote, I love the Holy Father. I was very impressed with him when we met as young bishops in 1997 at the Special Assembly on America in Rome. The church needs him to succeed in his ministry. I just offer a respectful observation. I have a lot of friends with good marriages that have lasted a long time. There's a lesson in that. You don't get a healthy marriage, and certainly not one that lasts, unless you're willing to speak the truth and listen to it honestly in return. The same applies to the church. Anyone in any kind of leadership who's unwilling to hear unpleasant truth needs to change his attitude toward reality. End of quote. So, maybe a little bit enigmatic there in that statement, but I think that speaks for itself. I'm just going to leave it there. But wow, you just don't hear bishops talking like this too much in public, but he kind of laid his thoughts out there, Archbishop Charles Chaput, in, of course, The Pillar. So you can check out that. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Wondering what you think of this. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149. All right, so let's, as you're calling in right now, I just want to also mention a brief news story that I'm kind of following. Obviously, Elon Musk has been in the news a lot, especially regarding his purchase of Twitter, which has been intriguing. It's been interesting how all of the Twitter files were released, and some of the stuff that's come out recently has been pretty shocking for people to hear, that White House officials, government officials were pressuring social media outlets, not just Twitter, to control the narrative about things like the vaccines. And this has been shown. The files have been released, and a lot of people, understandably, are mistrusting of a lot of media these days, and that's not helping. That's not helping. And I wonder, like, the next time something like this happens, it makes me wonder about the next time something like this happening. It's going to be really, really tough to get people on the same page, because there's so much mistrust out there about communications, about the media, what's true, what's not. And if there is an Ebola-type situation that happens in the United States, it's going to be, and people actually do need to quarantine for some reason, are we going to be able to actually do this? I don't know. I think trust has certainly been undermined in the media, in the medical community. But anyway, so people are mad at Elon for exposing this. Should they be? I don't know. But one thing, if you're involved in the stock markets, and this is not investing advice or anything like that, so disclaimers all over the place, warning stickers. But if you're following the stock markets, one of the big narratives in the news, obviously, has been Tesla's stock and its stock price absolutely tanking. I think it's down about 70% in a year. And what they did late last night, Tesla slashed the prices of its cars, its EVs, by quite a lot. And it kind of shocked people when they woke up this morning. If they didn't hear, I heard it late last night on Twitter. I was following this, and a lot of people who bought cars just a couple months ago are pretty ticked off, because they're going to be, they could have saved a lot of money if they'd only waited. Now, and Elon Musk was asked about that, and in one of his tweets, actually this wasn't with respect to this particular case. This was a couple of years ago when they'd raised their prices or lowered their prices. I can't remember. I think it was the lowering of the price of their vehicles at the time. And he just said, so it goes. You know, if somebody buys a car and then we lower our price, they're ticked off. But if they buy a car and then we raise the price later on, they don't offer to cut Tesla a check. You know, so it's the way it goes. And by the way, the reason why they did that, one of the reasons why they did that is, yeah, there might have been a bit of a backlog of vehicles. But there's a reason for that. People were waiting to find out what the United States government was going to do, what Tesla was going to do, because there's a $7,500 rebate that the government is offering for people who buy EVs. And strangely, Tesla, who, you know, no matter what you think of it, I think it's pretty objective. I don't think it's a stretch to say that they have the best technology in EVs right now. The longest lasting batteries, the farthest range, the supercharging network that they have is definitely light years ahead of what's out there right now. That's sort of the generic Electrify America network or whatever it's called. So, and I know a lot of people don't want to buy an EV and they don't want to hear about this, but, and there may be good reasons for that. There may not be, but it, whatever you might think, that the truth of the matter is this is the way things are going. And major car companies have already said, we are phasing out ICE production, internal combustion engine production, by the year 2035 or whatever. We're not going to make those cars anymore. So there is going to be a switch over to EVs. It's just a question of how quickly adoption is going to come. Well, one of the things that might speed this up for people is that by lowering their prices on the various models that they put out, Tesla has just made things like incredibly tempting for people. I'm just going to give you an example of what they've done here with their price cuts. The Tesla Model Y, which is kind of an SUV, it didn't qualify for the government rebate because of some technicalities. The car weighs too much or something like this. There's another vehicle that was produced by Jeep. It's a, I think, I don't know what kind of Jeep it was, but it was a plug-in hybrid, and it had, I don't know, I don't have the actual figures here, but I think it was 35, it can go 35 miles on a charge and then it switches over to gas or something like that. That qualified for the grant. But a fully electric Tesla with way bigger electric range did not, which is didn't seem to make any sense. But and it was also to do with the pricing of the cars. If the car was worth X, then it could get the rebate. But if it's worth more than that, it wouldn't get the rebate. So that's one of the reasons why they cut the prices. So the Tesla Model Y before last night was $65,990. $13,000 price cut brings it down to $52,990. That's quite a difference. But then you got to factor in the tax credit, the federal tax credit, $7,500. That brings the price down to effectively $45,990. And then if you add in the fuel savings of going all electric, it's approximately $7,800. That brings the ownership cost down to $38,190, all the way down from basically $66,000 to $38,190. That is a pretty big difference. So if you're thinking about getting an EV and you're thinking, I don't know if I can afford a Tesla, that just made it a lot more tempting to try to make the jump up. Or if you're, say you're a luxury buyer, say you're used to buying Beamers and Audis and you're thinking, man, like, I think Tesla still is considered a luxury car company. Some people might dispute that, but it was number one in luxury car sales last year. If you're buying a Beamer, let's say, or something a lot more expensive, you're now tempted to think, man, like, maybe I'll come down in price and grab this thing. So huge price cuts across the board, and a lot of people think it's going to negatively impact the stock price, but so far it really hasn't so much. And just want to read you one quote and I'll move on to other things. Dan Ives, who's an analyst at Wedbush, looking at the markets, he actually thinks this is Tesla playing offense, Elon Musk playing offense to spur demand, because there's a big EV price war right now. And, you know, sort of a little recession here. Are people really going to buy cars? This makes it a lot more tempting. And he said that margins might take a hit in terms of what they make on each car, but we like this strategic poker move, he says, by Musk and Tesla, because they're going to make up that money in volume by just having way more cars being sold in the market. And people have looked at graphs of Google searches just from last night. The amount of people searching now for Tesla vehicles online went up by a lot. Like, it just spiked, absolutely spiked. So it'll be really intriguing to see this. Anyway, so that's kind of a news item that people are talking about that I thought was pretty pretty intriguing. Producer Jim says still too expensive. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it's tempting. You know, that's the Model Y. Now, there are other models like the Model 3, a little cheaper than that even maybe, but they're talking about coming out. Now, there's a rumor that Tesla's this year, probably in 2023, they're going to come out with the famous Cybertruck, which is just wild. It's like something out of Blade Runner. If you've seen it, you probably have seen it. It's a different animal altogether. There's a rumor that they're going to come out with a mass market, really inexpensive EV that will cost about $20,000 or $25,000 or so. That to me will be, when that gets to the market, that will be a massive game changer in some other countries, but also in India, but also in North America. I think it's going to really, really be a big hit if they can pull that off. So anyways, just a little news item that I thought might catch your eye. Certainly caught mine. Catch your ear, I guess, because we're on radio. And we are listening to Relevant Radio, and this is the Cale Clark Show. When we come back, we will get you set for Super Wildcard Weekend. We're going to make our staff picks on all the games. We'll have that and much more for you on the other side of the break. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
And how you can live it and share it too. It's the Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
Hey, welcome back to the show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. In just a couple moments, we're going to have our picks for Super Wildcard Weekend, our staff picks. It's going to be pretty intriguing. And by the way, also, former NFL MVP Rich Gannon, quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings, Kansas City Chiefs, most famously with the Raiders, with whom he won the MVP award. Obviously a longtime analyst with CBS Sports and now with SiriusXM NFL Radio. Big Relevant Radio fan. He's a friend of the program. He will be on next week with me to talk about the aftermath of what's going to happen this weekend. By the way, Rich is also asking for prayers for his mom. I'm not sure what the situation is, but he tweeted this out last night. He asked for prayers for his mom, so please pray for Rich Gannon's mother, okay? So if we all do that together, we'll pray that whatever's going on there, the outcome will be a good one. So let's pray for Mrs. Gannon. All right, so let's go real quickly to the phones here, Jim. Let's go to Anne-Marie in Philadelphia. Hi, Anne-Marie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. So I just wanted to say that I'm very happy for, you know, to hear about Archbishop Pugh because we love him. And I love that he, you know, gives all his opinions and they're very well taken. And he is, you know, a very nice Orthodox, you know, bishop, well, archbishop. Mm-hmm. But we miss him here in Philadelphia. And but it's good that he supports Pope Francis, and we have to pray for him, you know, because God did appoint him, you know. And you know, the church is in, you know, a type of a crucifixion, you know, until Christ comes back, you know, or whatever God has in store for us, like maybe the divine will, Adam and Eve. You know, he always had a plan in redemption.
That's right.
The faster we get crucified, the faster, you know, everything, all the plans and all the sanctification comes about.
Well, I tell you, Anne-Marie, thank you very much for the call. A couple of things you said were really important. Obviously, you're a big fan of Archbishop Pugh and living in Philadelphia, of course. You were the recipient of his ministry for many, many years. We got to keep praying for him too. And
yes,
also Pope
absolutely.
Francis, we got to keep praying for Pope Francis. And thank you so much for your call, Anne-Marie. I really appreciate the listen. And just want to say to our listeners as well, yeah, keep praying for the Pope. And what Anne-Marie said too, she said the faster we're crucified, the faster, you know, the resurrection can happen, or something to that effect. And Jesus did say we have to take up our cross every day. And we have to be willing to do that and to pray, to do penance, offer sacrifices for our leaders and for all the everyone who needs it. We do need. There's a lot of fruit that can come from that, from uniting our prayers and our sufferings to the one sacrifice of Christ. And we're gonna keep doing that. We're gonna keep praying for all the bishops. That's what we do here at Relevant Radio, and for the Holy Father, and that God will bring about His plan, His mysterious plan. For the salvation of the world through us, broken instruments. There's no question about it. He's chosen to do it through us, and He's entrusted us with a lot. So we'll all have a lot to answer for. But at any rate, I was really thankful that he was able to be interviewed and speak his mind so clearly for the pillar. And let's keep him in prayer. Absolutely. Well, I'm going to call producer Jim back in here, and we are going to have some fun, because this show is about faith, facts, and fun. And just for the last couple minutes here, want to get you set for Super Wildcard Weekend. Producer Jim, do you have some NFL music, at least, in the background for us? Okay. The picks are in, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to give the staff picks for this weekend's matchups. All right, a lot of games this weekend. That's why it's Super Wildcard Weekend. Let's start with the first game on Saturday at 4:30 Eastern. The number 2 seed in the NFC, the San Francisco 49ers, record of 13-4 on the season, are playing against the 7th seed, who snuck in on the final day of the regular season, the Seattle Seahawks. And by the way, I don't know how old Coach Pete Carroll is right now. I'm sure Patrick Alog knows off the top of his head. I think he's 70. I want to say he's not. I don't know how old he is. He's in his 70s for sure. I don't want to overplay it, but Patrick Alog, tell me how old he is. You're a fact checker here. I don't have time to Google this, but
71.
Okay, I was gonna come in a little higher on that. I'm glad I didn't. So 71, but still, he has the energy of a guy who's 25. If you see him jumping around the sidelines, a lot of people thought that he was going to be fired by the time the playoffs rolled around, but he's still coaching the Seahawks. And by the way, Executive of the Year, I'd have to think a lot of votes are going to go to John Schneider, not from the Dukes of Hazzard, but the GM of the Seattle Seahawks. How smart was he? Is he looking right now, getting rid of Russell Wilson before the season, going to Geno Smith? Oof. It hasn't exactly been a bad thing for the Seahawks. All right. What is your pick? I'm going to start off with producer Jim. Who do you think is going to win this matchup?
I'm going to go with the home team, the San Francisco 49ers.
Going to go with the Niners. Jim with the Niners. Okay. Patrick Alog?
Even though I actually met John Schneider at a men's conference in Green Bay, he's actually a native of Green Bay, by the way.
Wow.
I actually asked him a question about what did he feel like when the Seahawks didn't run the ball. But
against the Super Bowl and the
yeah.
Patriots.
I'm going with the 49ers, who they're my Super Bowl pick out of the NFC.
Oh, well, there you go. And they're mine, too. They're mine, too. The only thing that gives me a little bit of pause there on that is the fact that their quarterback is a rookie. He was the last pick, Brock Purdy, in the NFL draft, the very last. You think Tom Brady's a story being a sixth-round draft pick, pick number 199, becomes the GOAT? Well, this guy was Mr. Irrelevant, the very last pick in the draft, and he was the third-string QB for the Niners at the start of the year. He's now first-string, and they've been averaging, I think, over 33 points a game with him, and they've got a 10-game winning streak. I just think the talent delta is just too much. I'm going with the Niners in this one absolutely as well, and I do think they're going to get to the Super Bowl, and we'll see if I'm a prophet or the son of a prophet. All right, next matchup, the Saturday evening game, 8:15 p.m. Eastern. It's an AFC matchup. The number 4 seed, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who won the AFC South at 9-8, beat the Tennessee Titans to win the division last week. They're going up against the enigmatic LA Chargers, come in at 10-7. I'm calling this the Head and Shoulders Bowl, because we've got two quarterbacks with absolutely great hair. We've got Trevor Lawrence, and we've got Justin Herbert with his locks. They call him the silent killer. How do you guys see this playing out? Let's start with you, Jim.
Yeah, so I call this the least interesting game of the weekend, in my opinion. But I'm going to go with the Jaguars over the Chargers.
Go with the home team, right? So Jags for Jim. What about you, Patrick?
You know, I originally went for the Jaguars as well, but in my picks, in my all six picks, I had all home teams winning. I'm like, that's not going to happen. So I changed it to the Chargers.
Okay, well, this is a minor upset special. It'd be a 5 seed over 4, but I'm also going to go with the Chargers. I'm pretty high on, I think Lawrence is great too. He had a tough rookie year, but he's really played well this year. He's in a good system with Doug Marrone. He's very QB friendly as a coach. Got the Eagles to a Super Bowl win, but I'm going Chargers. I like Herbert. I like the silent killer in this one. All right, let's go to the Sunday games. You know who I'm picking in this one. No one circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. You know, Chris Berman isn't here. You're going to have to just deal with my impersonation of him, but... I'll tell you this, the Bills are going to beat the Dolphins. By the way, this is the Lucas Holt Bowl. I'm calling this the Lucas Holt Bowl because former producer Lucas Holt was a huge, he still listens to the show, he's a huge Dolphins stan, but I just don't see this happening. I think that this would be a pretty competitive game if Tua plays. Tua Tagovailoa, quarterback of the Dolphins, he's had concussion issues, but if they have to go with the third string guy, even if Teddy Bridgewater plays, I don't see the Dolphins having any chance to beat the Bills in Buffalo this year. Buffalo is a team of destiny. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the Bills.
And same here. They're my other Super Bowl pick, the Bills.
Okay. I have to say, I'm going with the Bills in the Super Bowl. I'm a Bills fan. Kansas City scares me, though. They really do scare me. Patrick Mahomes, those guys, they cannot be discounted. But I do think Buffalo is going to get it done. Another team that's pretty... Oh, I'm going to get to them in a second, but let's go to the NFC matchup. This is also a tough one to call. 4:30 p.m. on Sunday, the Vikings, who come in as the 3 seed, going up against the 6 seed, the New York Football Giants. And who do you think's going to win this one, Jim?
Yeah, this was a tough pick, but I'm going with the Vikings.
Oh, the Vikings, okay. What about you, Patrick?
You know, originally, again, I had all home teams winning, but I couldn't have all home teams winning, so I picked the Giants. But now looking at it more, the Vikings have played all these close games. They've been, you know, they were down by 33 against Indianapolis as well. I think the end of the line is for the Vikings. New York advances.
Okay, well, listen, this is a tough call for me, too. My heart says the Giants, but I think Brian Daboll has done an incredible job as head coach. He was a former offensive coordinator in Buffalo. He's been amazing. He could be coach of the year. I think Minnesota's going to squeak by in a thriller. Justin Jefferson's going to do the gritty, and they're going to win. I'm saying this for Rich Gannon partially, too, because he's a former Vikings QB as well. All right, what about the night game? The other team that I think people are talking about them, and I know Smokin' Joe Burrow, who has very famously smoked a cigar after his LSU Tigers won the national championship, he gets overlooked sometimes in this talk of who's the best quarterback. Is it Mahomes? Is it Josh Allen? Joe Burrow, don't forget, he got the Bengals to the Super Bowl last year. They're going to play the Baltimore Ravens. How do you guys see this shaping out? Patrick, let's go with you first.
I'm going with the Bengals, and that is the one team that scares me in terms of if they play the Bills. But I'm going for the Bengals.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm also going Cincinnati here. They're dangerous. 12-4. Come in as the 3 seed. And Jim, what about you?
Yeah, so Joe is a cool cat, but I'm actually going for the Ravens to upset.
Oh really?
Yes.
Pulling the upset special here. Okay. That's going to be tough because Lamar Jackson is not going to be there. He's not going to be playing by the looks of it. He's saying he's still hurt and he's in a contract dispute right now. He might not even be back in Baltimore. We'll see what happens there. But I don't see them getting over. But hey, you never know. That's why they play the games, right? That's why they play the games. Any given Sunday. What about any given Monday? Monday night. This is what I was talking with Mike Kendall, VP Mike Kendall, earlier today. And he said this is the Schadenfreude Bowl because so many people want both of these teams to lose. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers going up against the Dallas Cowboys. And Tampa Bay is the 4 seed, won the division 8-9 with a losing record. But Tom Brady got him back in the playoffs. Dallas has been kind of sketchy recently. They come in at 12-5, but I don't know. How do you guys see this playing out? Start with you, Jim.
Yeah, so I agree with Mike. It's easy to have fun and enjoy with the Cowboys losing, but nothing would give me more pleasure than to see Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers lose. But that being said, I think Dallas is the better team, so I'm going with the Cowboys.
Going with the Dallas Cowboys. By the way, just for listeners, Jim's a huge St. Louis fan. He's still bitter about the first Patriots Super Bowl and the
cheaters.
He thinks the practice was taped. Yeah. He's just going to go ahead and say
it.
It probably was. So having said that, all right, what about you, Patrick?
Yeah, same here. I want to see both teams lose. I want to see an ugly game. I want the final score to be 3-0. I'm going in, but this was the hardest game to pick for me. I went back and forth. I'm going with Tampa only because Tom Brady's with the Buccaneers. That's the only reason why.
The GOAT. I tell you, this takes us back to the beginning of the year. Season opening game was Tampa Bay over the Cowboys, and Tampa looked like they were going to get back to the Super Bowl, but they've had so many injuries. Their offensive line has been a mess. Their offense hasn't, ever since the departure of Coach Bruce Arians, it just hasn't been the same, but Tom Brady's still Tom Brady. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a nail biter. I do think the Bucs will prevail in the end. We'll see. We'll keep track of these picks, and we'll see how we did on. Well, we'll have the final tally on Tuesday, I guess. But hey, there you go. Take it to the bank, or not? Maybe not. But thanks for joining me on the Cale Clark Show, and all this week as well. If you missed an episode, don't forget to check the podcast. You can binge them, you can listen to them, you can share them with your friends, relevantradio.com or the app or wherever you get your podcast. Now, do stay tuned tonight. We've got Trending with Timory coming up, followed by the Family Rosary Across America. And last night, speaking of prophecy, I unwittingly made a prophecy that came true. I said, wouldn't it be funny if Drew, because he's so used to praying the chaplet, he was guest hosting the rosary last night, if he actually started praying the chaplet instead of the rosary. I said, nah, that'll never happen. But apparently it did. So, hey, we'll have to have Drew on the show and chat about that. Oh, but Drew's a great guy. He's pulling for Philly. He's a Philly guy. Well, I'm pulling for all of you. Thanks for joining me today. Pray for me. I'll pray for you. Pray for Rich Gannon's mom as well. He'll join me next week. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.